Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Join us on Thursday as we explore Pet Health and Homeopathy, a show co-hosted by Homeopathy World Community founder and homeopath Debbie Bruck, and Doctor of Veterinary Medicine, author and homeopath Christina Chambreau. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your questions. Let's go!
Founder of Homeopathy World Community. Today is January 12, 2012, and we're going to be talking with Dr. Christina Chambreau, Doctor of Veterinary Medicine. And she is on the line, so.
Yep, I'm here.
Yeah, I'm going to turn down our sound for 1 second. Okay, we're ready to go. We're going to continue part two of hospice care with your pets, and I'm going to do my best to mute myself out when I'm typing because I know it interferes, but I have not figured out a solution to taking notes and
right.
Finding websites on the internet again while I'm on the line talking. And so when anyway, there
it's a fun challenge.
Oh, I am multitasking like crazy. So for folks who are new to the show, and I know that there are a lot of people who come in, they've never heard the show before, and they want a little introduction about our speaker, our co-host, and they also want to know where they can get more information. This show is brought to you by homeopathyworldcommunity.com. And if you go there, you can see Dr. Christina's picture on the front page, and if you click it, you're going to be linked right into all of the shows, all of the notes from every one of the shows. We've had about 12 or 14 shows already, quite a few, dealing with the 7 keys to your health, dealing with fleas, hypothyroidism, vaccinations, illnesses, how to begin observing your pets for homeopathic care, what you do in the holidays, stress, travel, and now we're up to hospice care, and this is part two of that. Christina, you want to tell us a little bit of your background today?
Oh, sure. It's the beginning of a new year, isn't it? Or was it last week? It was last week was the beginning of a new year.
Yes.
So I graduated from veterinary school in 1980, and I've been a veterinary technician since 1963. So I did 30 years of conventional medicine, and now I've done 30 years of holistic medicine. I started doing holistic medicine a few years after I graduated, and by 1988 was doing exclusively homeopathy and holistic approaches with my clients and working by telephone because there were so few of us homeopathically trained veterinarians in the late 80s. And mostly I was communicating and lecturing and speaking and got all sorts of more veterinarians to do holistic approaches as well as homeopathy. And so you now have a wide range of holistic practitioners that you can choose from, so around the world. And since this is Homeopathy World Talk World Community, we are focusing on this show on the homeopathic aspects, but I'm always mentioning the other holistic approaches as well because they're supportive and can make a big difference. So
yes, I'm always thrilled to learn all of the different approaches and the first steps to care that you provide for us that do not have to be homeopathic in every single case, just changing the environment or providing Reiki or some sort of other energy medicine,
mm-hmm.
or even rescue remedies, so flower essences. You have a huge toolbox that you use for caring for all different animals. Equine, birds probably, cats, yep. dogs. I don't know what. Do you take care of fish?
Well, I have over the years treated all sorts of animals. At this point, I'm mostly doing dogs and cats, but I have treated fish, birds, iguanas, cows, goats.
Reptiles and all sorts.
So homeopathy and holistic approaches work for all of it. I strongly recommend, and especially for people who are looking at hospice care for their animals or working with other people's animals doing hospice care, I strongly recommend learning Reiki. Everybody should learn Reiki. And number two is learning about flower essences and continuing to learn about flower essences, because Reiki and flower essences can never cause any harm. So they're your emergency go-to, start with this, always use this. And the third is to get a list of the early warning signs of illness, which is on the World Homeopathy World Community on my page. It's on my website, which is myhealthyanimals.com, and it is on the Academy of Veterinary Homeopathy's website. So have a list, and it's in my journal, the Healthy Animals Journal. It's right on the bookmark. So regularly, you want to be checking your animals for the early warning signs of illness, because if you do that and treat these little signs, like goop in the corner of the eyes, eating dog stool, drinking water if it's a cat that's not on dry food, these little things that we think are normal that really aren't, if we start treating then, maybe just with Reiki and flower essences, we're less mm-hmm. likely to end up in a hospice situation. We're more likely to have our animals live a long life, look at us one day and go, bye, and mm-hmm. die that night, or go through a day or two of discomfort and then die. So that's one of the helps, is the sooner you can start treating your animals and the sooner you can have them on whatever diet is best for them and you, whatever exercise, water, emotional state, all of that, the more you work at it, the better you do.
I have a question regarding, I know we're going to do a special show on diet, mm-hmm. but as people get educated about caring for their pets, and let's say you do have an elderly pet in the home, and when you start to make these types of changes to the diet, is it upsetting, or to the environment, is it upsetting, or is it, how does the transition to more well care?
Mm-hmm. That's a really good point. Mostly, for most animals, it's just a joy and they're thrilled and tickled pink. For some animals, mm-hmm. it can be stressful. And that, again, is a reason to keep a journal, whether you buy mine or whether you create your own, so that mm-hmm. you're noticing, okay, here's the date. I started changing the diet. Next day, gas. Next mm-hmm. day, no gas and seemed happier. Next mm-hmm. day. So as you're tracking the symptoms, you'll see, oh, this is working. Oh, that's not working. And you'll
I think about finicky cats. Mm-hmm. And, you know, picky cats and what they do or do not like to eat. And
right.
to do that kind of a transition after how many years, 20 years or whatever, of eating one type of food.
You know, Debbie, the really study that's out there on this is wonderful, and that's the group called Bright Haven. Their website is brighthaven.org, and they, for 15, 20 years, were adopting and housing over 60 cats at a time, including other animals. And the cats they were adopting were all 16, were most, 95%, 16 years old or older when they arrived. So their goal was to give a home to old cats. Now, these were often cats that had been mistreated, so they probably weren't on the best diet. And yet, when they came to Bright Haven, most of those cats were switched over to a raw food diet. So if they can do it, we can do it. Make sense? So the main thing I would say is just every animal's different. Some take to it and love it. Some you want to be gentle. You know, you always want to pay attention to your animal, whether it's an elderly animal, a hospice animal, or a puppy. If they are not liking what you're doing, then you have to stop and rethink your approach.
So last session that we talked, you gave an example of how your cat did end the life of, you know, it was a really good story, and we learned a lot from it. And do you have more examples?
Absolutely.
So that will give us an idea. Go ahead.
One of the common, and one of the key things here is, I want to reiterate for people who are new this time, is that hospice has an official definition, and that is that an animal has an illness that is projected to kill it within 6 months. That even with treatment, there's just probably no treatment for it, or they don't think it would, this animal would live more than 6 months. So people may approach and begin hospice at that point. If they're doing holistic and homeopathic approaches to hospice, their animal may live multiple years longer. For instance, at Brighthaven, again, is an example, and I don't know the specific history of this cat, but they adopted an elderly cat, treated it with raw foods, not vaccinating, homeopathy, flower essences, Reiki, and maybe something else. And that cat lived to be 34. So yeah, there was a hospice case at age, say, 20 that lived 14 more years. An example of a case of mine was an old cat, 16, 17-year-old cat, who the owner called me because her cat had been diagnosed with kidney problems. It was showing all the symptoms of renal disease, vomiting, weight loss, not eating, dehydrated. But this cat so hated going to the veterinarian that in order to draw blood, they had to anesthetize the cat. So she would not be able to give sub-Q fluids, which is one way that both conventionally and holistically we keep cats going. There was no way she could go back to get follow-up blood work. So she called me, and there is not a remedy for renal disease. There are over 4,000 homeopathic remedies, and any one of the 4,000, or most of the 4,000, could be used to treat renal disease. With animals, it tends to be, we tend more to use the Polycrest, the remedies that have a broad spectrum of action that when they're tested bring up lots and lots and lots of different symptoms. So I wasn't necessarily looking at all 4,000 at the beginning. So at that point, I took the case and I carefully asked questions of a very observant owner. And in addition to the traditional kidney symptoms, which I didn't put much weight on because that happens in every animal with kidney disease, I found out that this cat mostly vomited at night, that this cat was very fearful and very timid, i.e. had to be anesthetized at the veterinary clinic. The veterinary clinic could just offer euthanasia. There wasn't anything they could suggest. And this cat's pattern of drinking water was not to sit by the bowl and drink a lot of water at one time. It would often do a sick cat symptom, which is sitting by the bowl and looking at the water but not drinking, just hanging their head over the water bowl. But when it drank, he would drink a few sips, and then half an hour later, 10 minutes later, an hour later, would go back and drink 10 more sips. So there was frequent small sips in a fearful cat who seemed to be worse after midnight. That fits a homeopathic remedy very well, which is Arsenicum album. Now, at that point, this was very early in my practice, and the owner had 6X. And X is the dilution of homeopathic remedies where it's diluted 1 drop to 10 drops of diluent. And I started with that. We started giving it once or twice a day, and the cat improved so that within a month the cat was active, not vomiting, eating well, and had put back on probably 70% of the weight that had been lost. And so I said at that point, I didn't push things. I was new to this. I'm getting a good result. I didn't want to go higher in potency yet, which I would have at this point. So she continued for another year and a half doing the 6X either once or twice a day. And then after a year and a half, the symptoms started to slip. They started showing up again. The cat started vomiting. There were no new symptoms, so it didn't make me think of another remedy. So I increased the potency to 6C, and we started with every other day. The cat went back to improving, and at some point, maybe a year later, year after that, the symptoms started to come back, and so the guardian on her own just went to once a day on the 6C. And then 4 or 5 years after the initial presentation, the cat got very sick with multiple symptoms, diarrhea, skin, all sorts of things. Nothing, did not respond to any homeopathic remedies and died within 2 weeks. So there's a case that arsenicum album was given on a repeated basis, didn't cause a proving, which some people would worry about, lived a great life for another 4 to 5 years, and didn't have to go back and be reanesthetized to be treated or tested.
So really changed the kind of the disposition of how that cat was for the last few years of that cat's life. And again, giving a remedy every single day or every week is now quite common practice, I'm learning from many homeopaths. When there's pathology, when the cat even a human that's being treated, the vital force needs the constant stimulation of the remedy. It's not able to keep going on its own without the support of the homeopathic remedy. And in many very severe cases of disease, homeopaths are giving daily doses.
Well, here's the thing. I think a lot of the times when we're giving daily doses is because we aren't giving the right remedy.
Okay.
Number one. Number two, if daily doses are given and are needed, they should be done in either the LM, which is the 6th edition of the Organon, or the dilution method, which is the 5th edition of the Organon. Now, I didn't in this cat. We just gave it dry. But I now would suggest, if you're repeating remedies, to do it in liquid so you get a little bit of change in potency every time it's given. But here's another example, and this is on the Homeopathy World Community website on my page. This is from a book by Edward DeBucular, How Homeopathy, How It Works, and he has 101 cured cases from multiple different practitioners. And there was a dog, a gun dog, that developed a very enlarged heart in a sudden onset of symptoms and had arrhythmias and looked like he was near death. And again, the homeopath asked the questions that separated this dog in heart failure from other dogs in heart failure. This dog was dignified, haughty, growls, and yet was a coward. That makes me think of Lycopodium. This dog would sing in front of the radio, watch TV, and would push on the remote control to get the TV on, would wake them at six in the morning, and at noon he would go to the table and would call them. Arrogant, punishes himself, he wants to be perfect, crusty growths on eyelid, never drinks water, will not walk in water, craves sugar, sleeps on his back, and only will eat his food when it's burning hot. Now, those are really unusual, right? And those are ones that many veterinarians would recommend euthanasia. He was
I never heard of giving food to a pet that's burning hot. I mean, do people give cooked hot food to their animal?
Sure. And this gets back to your original question about how do you switch an older dog or cat to a raw food diet. You experiment. You try it frozen. You try it slightly warm. These people probably, at some point, a piece of hot meat dropped on the ground when the dog wasn't eating and the dog ran over and ate it, and they went, well, let's try that.
Uh-huh.
So it's very specific, but we're sort of talking about potency right here.
Okay.
And what happened with this case is the remedy chosen was Aurum, A-U-R-U-M,
mm-hmm.
and they gave 9C once a day for 2 days. every 2 days. So they gave one dose, and 2 days later they gave a second dose. And after the second dose, the dog was completely healed. The mentals cleared up. We always say give high potencies for mentals. If you have the right remedy, it doesn't matter. The dog had no more capriciousness, no more fear of water. And the heart continued to be fine, and a year later he was still fine. So you do not always have to give remedies repeatedly, even with severe physical damage. It's okay to, but each time you give the remedy, you want to think, do I need to give a remedy at this point?
Okay, so I have two or three questions, if I may.
Okay.
Okay. Let's see. One, I want to know, because you seem to have been leading so much toward lycopodium for many of the symptoms that were given, why
just that one?
Just that one?
Yeah, I mean, I could probably defend a few others, but
yeah.
We won't go into the why on the remedy here, because
we're
more looking at treating older animals. But here's a case, this would have been a hospice case. In conventional medicine, this dog would have been euthanized, or if the people said, I won't euthanize, the veterinarians would have said, well, take him home and, you know, here's some Lasix if he starts coughing, or they would start some medications, but they would expect it to be, you know, there would be frequent reevaluations, a lot of money would be spent, it would be very expensive, stressful on the people, stressful on the dog, and here nothing had to be done. And nothing was done. Was, you know, two doses of a homeopathic remedy and the dog was fine.
Amazing, amazing. So
now, and I don't know, after the book was written, this dog could have lived many more years. This was just a year to the time the book was written. So the potency is not always as important as the remedy choice. And I've got another, you had another question. Go ahead.
Oh, well, one of my other questions kind of related to, you almost answered it, about giving only the two doses and the animal was really much, much better. And we were talking about giving daily doses. And I you kind of remarked that if you have to give them daily doses over a really long period of time, that you may not have the correct remedy. Although I have seen x-rays and MRIs and other kinds of documentation, clinical lab work, that shows that when a remedy is given over the period of course of months to years, that there's actual correction to pathological disease in many, many cases.
Absolutely, but the point I'm making is two doses of a 9C
cause
the correction of the pathological damage.
Well, yeah, this
did
amazing.
Not have to. My point is, it did not have to be repeated in order to get the result. I'm not saying it doesn't work when you repeat it, but if it's not needed, it can cause proving symptoms. It can stir things up more. So I would always pay attention when you're giving doses daily to see if you still need to be giving it or not.
Okay, excellent point. So basically, you give a remedy, you watch and wait, you observe, you make an evaluation whether we do need to repeat or not to repeat.
Yes.
Okay, great.
Now, sometimes, because it's an older animal and there is pathology, I will start with saying, let's give this remedy every day. So I'll start by saying, give it every day. However, I say, every time before you give it, stop and ask yourself, is it needed today? And then give people the criteria for that. And we'll do a lot more. We'll continue to work on this evaluation of response because that's important.
Okay. Are you going to give another example?
Yep, I am. Because here's one just the opposite. Here's a case where a high potency in a hospice case led to a complete cure for 7 years. So Dr. Ed Schaefer is a homeopathic practitioner in Pennsylvania, particularly working with dairy cows. And one day he was on the farm or was called out to the farm to do a health certificate, death certificate, basically it said, to say this cow is healthy enough to be slaughtered because she was completely paralyzed in her rear and couldn't stand up. And with those cases, it's usually a hip problem, and that's just, they just slaughter. And she was a few years old, So she was fairly on the young side. And he said to the farmer, you know, I can't do this today because the knacker is not going to come out until Monday. And it has to be within 24 hours. So you have to call me on Monday, and then I'll come back out and do the certificate. But he said, let me just take a look at her anyway. And he looked at the cow and decided she's going to be killed anyway. And I think she fits the homeopathic remedy phosphorus. He gave one dose of a 10M phosphorus, didn't even tell the farmers. And about 6 months later, he was on the farm and he said, hey, what about that cow that you were going to put down? You never told me, you never called me back on that. And they said, oh, within 24 hours, she was up and walking and eating and milking again. And that cow lived another 7 years and was the top milker in the herd.
Unbelievable. So I think, you know, when I hear something lame or paralysis, I immediately think of remedies like causticum.
Mm-hmm.
So how was this phosphorus?
Oh, phosphorus is a major one for paralysis.
Okay.
For rear end weakness. If you go to extremities, weakness, phosphorus is a 3. If you go to extremities, weakness, upper limbs, it's a 2. Extremity weakness, lower limbs, it's a 3. Lots of remedies for that. Probably there's a good, when I'm looking at a dog that's got rear end paralysis or weakness, you need so many more symptoms because I would be thinking of a good 100 remedies that have that as a strong mm-hmm. a strong symptom for them. Arsenicum, lycopodium, phosphorus, basically all of the polycrests are there.
Okay, so you have to look at other indications, like
just
whether
like we did, just like we
cat.
Did with that kidney cat.
Mm-hmm. Right, so whether they're thirsty or not thirsty, whether they like hot or cold food,
right.
whether they're friendly or want to be on their own.
And if you go back to the notes on the Homeopathy World Community page, you can see the talks that I've done. I've done two or three, at least three, on case-taking. So as you listen to those, you'll see a lot more about the case-taking.
Okay.
Now, another key point that I make in my notes on hospice is that it's very important for everybody to, whoever is doing the treating, whether it's yourself or whether you're helping a friend, you need to be looking at the needs of the family. And Sue Armstrong is this incredible veterinarian, homeopathic veterinarian who treats people and animals. She's British and also has a college that she runs in British Columbia. And she says that sometimes guardians go into a state of grief too early. So they go to a veterinarian, and at the hospice conference that I was at, the Nikki Hospice Conference, which we have links to, and you can get other, I spoke there 1 year, in 2009, I think. They said that many, many veterinarians, conventional veterinarians, you go in and your cat has high kidney values, and they recommend euthanasia immediately. Or they tell you that your cat's going to be in excruciating pain. So you can imagine that people, even if they're choosing to not do that, but they're exploring holistic options, that they've been put into a major grief state because a veterinarian has told them their animal's going to die and be in pain. So we have to mm-hmm. address that, and we have to give, often they go into such a state that they need phosphoric acid, or they need phosphorus, or pulsatilla, or ignatia, or natrum muriaticum. So we need to be make sure that we're treating guardians as well as the animals. Also, mm-hmm. even if there's not a mistaken grief happening, there's often an exhaustion. So you mm-hmm. have to be paying attention. If you're exhausted, then you need to make sure you're treating yourself. It may be that you need hugs. It may be you need a break. It may be you need a flower essence, homeopathic remedy, Reiki, massage, anything. But you mm-hmm. want to make sure that you're taking care of the caretaker as well as the animal.
That's really very, very important information. And I could imagine that if the
pet owner, the guardian or caretaker, is in a state of shock or depression or exhaustion, that is reflected back into the animal.
Yes.
Makes
them more ill sometimes.
Right. Because
not always.
It could if they have a close bond, and if the pet can reflect about what's going on in their caretaker. I was just reading that there are even dogs that know when their owner is going to have an epileptic fit.
Or get low blood sugar.
Or get low blood sugar, okay.
Or almost anything, yep.
Uh-huh. So they are sensors for us.
Yep, some are, some aren't.
Yeah, okay. So maybe we'll have a show about what kind of pets are the most sensitive.
I don't know the answer to that one yet. I think it may be their remedy state or their acupuncture predilection or their Ayurvedic type, or it may just be more what they came here on the planet to do. But we could certainly have some incredible stories about that.
That
I want to just briefly go over, let's see, what we're going to do next time is we've really given lots of great examples, and next time we'll go into the homeopathic steps that are needed to prescribe in hospice situations, and then we'll look at what remedies, what are the materia medica, what are the remedies that are useful in hospice cases. And remember that during this talk, everything that we're saying here for hospice cases certainly applies directly to the any animal at any time in life. So it's not all the things we're talking about are not just for hospice cases. I did want to ask, one person had sent us an case of their animal who they were having, a dog that they were having a lot of trouble with. And so I'm wondering if Marilyn with the Yorkie Terrier is in the chat room.
No, we have a good number of people in the chat, but she is not with us today.
Okay.
But you can address.
So we'll wait till next time, and we'll...
She may not be able to get on the live show, but you want to wait? So
actually, I can address it just briefly. So we have, in case Marilyn, does check in and listens to the MP3 download, which all of you can do by going to Homeopathy World Community. She has a 2.5-year-old dog that she's had for 1 year that pees everywhere in the house. And she says she's done all the training that is needed. She went to a veterinarian and had a complete blood workup, but they never got urine, so they never tested the urine. And she says it's concentrated and thick, maybe with crystals. So definitely this dog needs to get a urinalysis done. Didn't need the other, probably didn't need the rest of it, but needed the urinalysis. And then the dog also has a lot of personality problems with anxiety and defecates if she goes to Staples, defecates if she's going to a friend's house, defecates when she goes to the hairdresser. And she's given Stramonium, Pulsatilla, and Buritacarb. So, and she feeds a basically raw food diet. So the couple of things, number one is, I want everybody who downloads this MP3 to know we'll follow up again next week, and we may have some more feedback from her. But first off, I want you to think about the three remedies, Stramonium, Pulsatilla, and Buritacarb, and see, are those all remedies that are similar enough that you might be thinking of them in the same case? What's the difference between Stramonium and Pulsatilla and Buritacarb? Why would one be indicated and maybe not another one? So that's number one. Number two, think about case taking. So with basically this being all the information there is, the only other piece was the dog sleeps in his crate and when needs to be aside when she's working, the owner doesn't trust the dog to keep him out of the crate when she's not watching. So that's the end. I think there was something about drinking. But basically there's not, so far, we don't have a lot of symptoms. So at this point, our case taking would have the urinating everywhere, but it could just be a training issue and not a vital force issue. So just curing the urinating may not be a homeopathic remedy need. It may be that there are other behavioral things that need to be done. Number two is a symptom we have is the urine. So there's a description of the urine. There's a little bit of description of the anxiety. So we need a lot more symptoms. So go back to the case taking and listen to the earlier tapes on case taking. Look at the early warning signs. So this is for Maryland or for anybody who wants to work on their own animals. You can see you need a lot more information here to treat homeopathically. Now, some of the other modalities that she could try right now, one is the T-Touch anxiety wrap. She could learn to take a small ACE bandage and wrap it in a figure eight pattern around the dog's body and then see if it prevents the anxiety that's causing him to defecate in different places. I wouldn't take him to places that cause anxiety until this is cured. I would do it maybe once just as a test, but I would not do that. I would leave him at home. Flower essences, again, no harm. I would use flower essences, and I would use Reiki to help in general with this dog. In addition to Reiki, there's many different long-distance energy healers that do different things. Sound treatment, like with Dina Spears of singingwoods.org and many other approaches. She's feeding 70% beef or pork and the rest vegetables. So another thing is I want to make sure the vegetables are pureed and that there are and that enough calcium is being given just for basic nutritional checking in here. So that's basically it. And so I would suggest she works with a professional homeopath and a professional Chinese medicine, since she's done a few remedies. One of them did have some effect. Pulsatilla made the dog a little worse.
We also have acupuncture, right, or chiropractic.
Chinese medicine, all of that could help. But yeah. I would really be thinking about some additional training things as well.
Okay. Sounds really, really good. It's a difficult case when there's such a behavioral problem in this way, whether it's from the origin of where they got the cat from, the dog from the pound, and there was something that happened early on.
Yeah, it came from a breeder and came with diapers, so you know it was always a problem.
Yeah. So from the very start.
Right.
We'll
do more about hospice next week. And we may readdress this case next week or anybody else who emails a case in to you.
Okay, and we wanted to encourage people, if they enjoy the show, there's a lot of action steps that they can take. They can follow the show, get reminders, favorite the show, and they can tell their friends about it by either embedding the widget that plays the show directly onto their website, onto their blog, post the link on Twitter, MySpace, Facebook, up on StumbleUpon or any of the other bookmarking places. You can put it into your email, a little link to the show, and let people know that they can get on and learn, ask questions and comment live or after the fact. Download the archives. We also have many other shows from the Blog Talk Radio Homeopathy World Community on Monday night. Grant Bentley has been doing facial analysis, talking to us about that method. And on Wednesday morning, Dr. Adil from India has been teaching us about heart health and diabetes and many other ways to care for our heart. And definitely a lot of remedies are being taught there. We had some special shows, one with Kate Birch on vaccinations. She is an author. The last two shows of the past 2 weeks were Dr. Pawan with HIV/AIDS and opportunistic diseases and how he's been working with many children with these born with these diseases. And we have on Thursday vaccinations and your rights at 12. And then finally, Christina rounds out the week with this wonderful show on pet health. So we've got a lot going on, and really appreciate everyone who
shares, and listens.
All right.
Okay,
well,
thank
have
you.
A great week, and we'll talk to you next week.
Okay, we'll sign out. Take care, everyone.
Thank you for listening to Pet Health and Homeopathy on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio with homeopaths Debbie Brook and Dr. Christina Chambreau. We encourage you to follow our show, click the reminder button to receive email notices when show airs, share with friends on Facebook and Twitter, and send in your comments and questions. See you next time!